The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Gab Marcotti will be here to look ahead to some of the big Champions League matches this week. We'll start, though, in the Premier League. And what an impressive victory for Leicester City, thrashing Leeds United by 4-1. Puts them up to second in the table. Julian Ron and Stevie Nicol with us. Stevie, can Leicester win the league?
Ooh, I don't think so. Listen, when they're flowing and their movement's great and Vardy's on his game, then they can create and score goals, no question. But I'm not sure that they can be as consistent for a whole season. Yes, they got quality. Yes, they're good to watch. I just don't think they can sustain it for the whole year. Pretty much the way they didn't last year. You know, this time in the start of last season, they were absolutely flying, and they didn't peter off, they fell off the edge of a cliff. So unless that changes, which we won't know until the end of the year, I'm not ready to say they can hold on for a whole season.
This was an impressive display from them, wasn't it, Jules?
It was really good. I have to say, I mean, the way Leeds are playing suited them again, a bit from like we saw in certain games already this season at Man City, for example, but they were very impressive. I thought Vardy was great. I thought Rodgers' coaching when Maddison and Cheng Izundo came on paid off, obviously. And yeah, it was really good. I would agree with Stevie. I still think that they can, if they in January, if they're still in the race for the title, then I think they would go and maybe by a couple of players that can make a difference in the second half of the season, unlike last season. And then they will have Ndidi back, they will have Soyuncu back as well, and they will be even stronger than what they are now. So if by January they're still very much in that title race, I think they can still dream.
Where did Leeds get it wrong, Stevie, today?
Leeds are just a hit and miss, let's be honest. They don't, in my opinion, listen, you can argue that Bamford scored a hat-trick last time out, but he's not a regular goal scorer for me. He's not going to be one of the better strikers in the Premier League. And Leeds need somebody who will consistently put the ball in the back of the net for when they lose goals. So they need somebody who they can count on, and I don't think they have anybody. Yes, they get the ball in the box a lot, but I mean, even today, other than the chance right at the very start of the game before Leicester went one up, I think it was 2 minutes in, Bamford had a header. But even the goal they got was a cross that just evaded everybody and went in. I don't see them scoring enough goals. I'm sorry.
Let's turn our attention to what happened at Old Trafford. I'm glad you're on, Jules, even though you're very late in joining us today. You were obviously at the game. I'm intrigued to...
I'm sorry.
You're not really. What sort of vibe there was for that first half? Because what struck everybody watching, I'm sure, at home is about how flat that performance was from Manchester United.
It was very much like that in the stadium. And you could hear everything, of course, because there was no fans. And there was not much coming from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer either. And I just thought that tactically, Arteta just outplayed them. But like, it happens sometimes. Solskjaer was very good tactically against PSG, against Leipzig, against Tuchel and Nagelsmann, who are two very good managers as well. But on Sunday, he just got it wrong. It was very hard to see what the plan was, what the tactics were, even what the formation was. It looks very much like when we're kids and we play at school in the playground and you pick a team and then you basically give the ball to the best player on your team and hope that he does something good. That's what it was. And that was just not good enough against a team, an Arsenal team that was very well structured, very well drilled, that knew exactly what to do with proper patterns of play. Not like United. United never did three passes together going forward. They had one chance because they took a free kick quickly and then Rashford had a wonderful pass for Greenwood and that's it. And I don't think that's good enough.
Stevie, what struck you from this game?
That Pogba's a liability as a defensive midfielder. You know, we know what his qualities can be when he's going forward, when he's driving. As Ollie was quick to point out after the Leipzig game, you know, when he's driving at the opposition and he's playing these passes and this and that. Unfortunately, every time it comes to him and the defensive side of the game, he's an absolute liability. And he gave the penalty away because he doesn't really know what he's doing as a defensive player. So the common denominator is Paul Pogba. We said before the game that we didn't think, or certainly I did, that Pogba would play. You know, you just had three great results in the trot. Newcastle, PSG, Leipzig. And then you change it so he can play Pogba, and then he ends up costing you. So, listen, I guess that's down to the manager's choice, and the manager got it wrong by picking Pogba.
Jules, you spoke to Pogba after the game.
Yeah, I mean, Pogba played against Leipzig. He started, he was maybe the best player in that game for an hour until Rashford came on and did his thing and scored the hat-trick. So, you know, he was at fault, and I like the fact that he came out after the game and said he didn't have to come and speak to me and on French television. He did. He explained what happened. He also spoke to the Premier League, I think, and to the BBC to explain and put his hand up, and rightly so, saying, this is my mistake. I take full responsibility. I made that foul. I gave a penalty away. I should have been better in the game anyway. Clearly, Arsenal's plan was to block me and Bruno Fernandes, and we could not find a solution to find the space and to find a bit more freedom to have an impact on the game, because Elneny and Partey were on us, especially the first half, all the time. I like that, but of course he's right. He should have done more. I don't think it's easier for him when there's not a plan around him. There's not a plan like there was against Leipzig or against PSG, for example. I think it's hard for him, but also for Bruno Fernandes, when, as we've been saying, tactically it's a bit all over the place. And I just don't think it helps when you play him on the left-hand side of a three in a 4-2-3-1 formation. I don't think that helps him at all. But I will always defend him, as you know, and I'm maybe a bit biased, because he also gave a penalty away. And I agree with you, Steve, he didn't do enough in the game. I'm just not sure he's helped by the lack of tactics in that team at the moment in some of the Premier League games, for sure.
If you're Ollie, then, how do you do it? How do you fix it, Jules? How do you make Pogba the best Pogba he can be?
What we saw against Leipzig, I thought, was the way forward. You can play with two up front, with Bruno as a number 10, and then you've got three midfielders behind. You've got Fred and McTominay or Matic, who will maybe sit a bit more, and you've got Pogba on the left-hand side, where he was so good at Juventus in a midfield three like this, where when you minimise a little bit the work that he has to do defensively, certainly around your box, like we saw against Arsenal, because, like Stevie said rightly, he's not very good at that. But at least you get him the freedom to go forward on that left-hand side with the ball in that midfield three, and I think that's where he's at his best. And you can play like that. I really thought he was going to play like that against Arsenal, but it wasn't that at all. It was a complete mishmash, and that's how I think you could help him. But he, for him to play well, he has to be fully fit physically, and I'm not sure he is just there yet. He was positive for the COVID. He had that long injury last season, and I think he has to be right mentally as well to give the best that he can, like against Leipzig, but not like against Arsenal.
Roy Keane went viral with his rant after the game. Stevie, very critical of the players. We've heard other former Manchester United players as well, critical of the current squad. Whilst a lot of them seem to absolve Solskjaer of any sort of responsibility, is that fair?
No, absolutely not. Listen, what Keane said, it's hard to disagree with, because as a player, you know, part of your responsibility is to be ready for the whistle to go. You know, self-motivation, which Roy's always on about. He's always on about, I don't need anyone to tell me to do this or do that. Well, unfortunately, people like Roy Keane aren't playing the game anymore. And so, 100%, Ollie's responsibility also is to make sure, listen, as a coach, sometimes you can smell that the dressing room's flat before a game. And it's part of your job to be able to figure that out. And so clearly, Ollie couldn't figure that out. And that is, that, in my opinion, is down to generally experience and spending a lot of time with your players and know your players inside out. Know what they're thinking and how they're behaving and how what is normal. You know, football players like normal. And that means that's why we get ready at the same time every week. We put on the right boot first. It's normal. His job is to spot when it's not normal. And he didn't do it. And that's lack of experience. So he has to take responsibility for that as well.
Jules, how different would the rhetoric be around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if Laurent Blanc got exactly the same results for United?
I mean, I don't know, because Blanc played for United as well. Not as well as Solskjaer, not for as many years. So maybe if we take someone who is not from that, you know, United DNA and has been there before, I think he would be completely different. But Solskjaer had some great games in those 100 games that he had in charge of United. But he had some terrible ones where he looked clueless and his team looked clueless. And that's what I don't get. And I said to Pogba at the end, how can you explain the contrast? How can you be so good against Leipzig on Wednesday and then so bad on the Sunday where you offer nothing? And Pogba said, I wish I had the answer. I'm not sure. And I don't think Solskjaer knows either. I don't think Mike Phelan knows. I don't think people at the club know either, and the rest of the squad either, because it's really hard to get your head around, okay, how can you get it so right at times and so wrong at other times?
Yeah.
And maybe it's a lack of motivation, like Stevie explained, in certain games, maybe, but the Crystal Palace game was dire. The Tottenham game was horrible. Even the Chelsea game last weekend, the weekend before, was just, okay, well, there was just not much apart from Rashford on his own. And again, we go back to this. What's the game plan? What's the tactics? Is it to give the ball to your best player and then see what happens? Certainly, it looked like that in the Premier League this season. Not so much in Europe, but in the Premier League. And I just don't know what's happening, why they have that blockage in the Premier League and why they just can't do it like they do in Europe this season.
Last word on this to you, Stevie.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the luckiest man alive that there's no fans in the stadium. Because if there were, he would be getting absolutely slaughtered by Man United fans. So, listen, the fact that everybody above Ole likes him and nothing's going to happen to him while they're in charge, if there were supporters in the stadium, he would be absolutely getting crucified. Because when a game's finished, you don't have to go and look at the media. You don't have to go on Twitter. You don't have to go on Instagram. You don't have to do any of that. You can kind of cocoon yourself in this wee thing of, you know, with the players and the club and everything else. But you can't hide when there's a crowd and there's like 70,000 people at Old Trafford and you're rotten. So he's a lucky man right now.
Steve, I'm impressed you named all those social media apps. That's it. Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, you take a look at the bottom of the Premier League. Manchester United very much at the wrong end, currently sitting 15th in the table.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We reached the third round of matches then in this year's group stages of the Champions League. Real Madrid against Inter Milan, certainly the standout tie. Before we get to that, let's focus, shall we, on Atalanta against Liverpool. Liverpool, of course, going to the tie, having won both of their opening matches. Gab Marcotti joins us, as does Stevie Nicholls. Stevie, considering it's Manchester City at the weekend, how do you approach this game if you're Liverpool?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I believe that both Atalanta and Liverpool are going to qualify from this group comfortably. And so that means that if you're Klopp and you've got City coming up, you can afford not to put your first team out. I mean, the other side of that is, right now, I would suggest that Liverpool should be thinking about somehow batting down a back line and sticking with it. So, you know, I don't think Phillips is available for this game, so that means Reece Williams is going to have to come in and play. So I would suggest that you play your proper back line. I think you can make changes in the middle of the park and up front, but I think you have to get the back line playing together. And as I said, whether it's Phillips or Williams ultimately, you've got to get some cohesion going. So definitely play your proper defenders. But as far as the game, I don't think it's hugely important for either side. I don't believe Ajax or Maitland can qualify from this group.
Gab from Atalanta, nice time to play Liverpool.
Yeah, it's obviously a good time to play Liverpool, given the injuries that are there, from Van Dijk to Fabinho to Thiago Alcantara. Joel Matip and Naby Keita are obviously coming back as well, but you know, they've started training again, but I don't know that Klopp would risk them for the first minute. He wants all his options for the big game at the weekend against City. The Klopp's record in Italy against Serie A clubs isn't good. So if you're superstitious there, you know, that might make you think over the two legs. But I think in general, if you're Atalanta, you've had your ups and downs. Roman Gosens is day to day. Daroon definitely out, but beyond that, they're going to put out a pretty competitive team. Romero fit as well, and you know, they love the idea of taking 3 points off of Liverpool at this stage.
Meanwhile, Real Madrid against Inter Milan was always going to be a big tie when you took a look at the draw. It's an even bigger tie, Gab, when you're looking at how both teams have started, well, not started, this qualification process.
Yeah, nobody was expecting, this current table in the group. I think what's tricky for Inter, obviously, there's no Lukaku. The indication is that Conte is going to play Ivan Perisic with Lautaro up front, because Alexis Sanchez only has one training session under his belt. That did not work great at the weekend against Parma. From Real Madrid's perspective, obviously they're coming off that big win at the weekend. You got the lift from the fact that Eden Hazard, you know, started, scored a great goal. If you keep him fit, I think, and he's anything like what player he was supposed to be when he joined, then I think all of a sudden, you know, things really look up for Zinedine Zidane, because you've got the option of the front two, you can play the front three. So from Real Madrid's perspective, you know, this is a good time, and I think Zidane will feel that he's in a good place, you know, as long as, obviously, if they deliver the result here.
But they're so incredibly inconsistent at the moment, Real Madrid, Stevie. That's the issue.
Well, they are, but I guess a good thing is, I mean, I look at this game and it's all about momentum. Real Madrid get Hazard back. You know, they win the Clásico. They get Hazard back, scores a fantastic goal, and they're on the up. And Inter are the axe, but absolutely the opposite. They lose the man that really is Mr. Inter right now, and that's Lukaku. So you've got one team going one way, and the other one going the opposite way. So as average as Real Madrid have been, I just don't see Inter Milan beating Real Madrid. It could be a draw. It's possible to be a draw, but Inter Milan don't win it.
Gab, are you going to argue that they're not inconsistent?
I actually think, I know we disagree on this, I thought they played well in the Clásico. Huesca aren't great, but whatever. But in between the Gladbach game, yeah, they needed those two late goals. And certainly in terms of results, they weren't consistent. But I thought they actually played really well in that game as well. So they're developing, at least over the span of three games, I think they're certainly developing a little bit more of a consistency.
Gab, come on. You're against Gladbach. You need a late winner. You're 2-0 down again.
So what? You played better?
Weak.
You created more chances? I'm sorry. I'm not about results. I'm about performances too, Gab. I make no apologies for that. You know, this is football. It's a low-scoring game. Sometimes you can play really well and need a last-minute equaliser to equalise.
Stevie doesn't think Inter are going to get anything from this. Do you agree?
Not if they play like they did at the weekend. The problem with Inter is that when Lukaku is there, then everything falls into place. Not because Lukaku carries the team, but because Conte's patterns of play, they become effective. Lukaku has the right movements. He holds the ball up. He lays it off. When Lukaku, who is a big, strong, tall man, is replaced by Ivan Perisic, who is a smaller, thinner man with different qualities, and who's not a center forward, everything changes, and it becomes a case of individuals trying to do something. Inter still have a lot of good players. You saw it at the weekend. You know, whether it's Eriksen, Brozovic, Lautaro, Hakimi, all these guys can do things individually, but they no longer are what Conte wants them to be, which is a collective. They no longer have the same patterns of play, and it becomes a lot tougher for them to get the job done, let alone against a top side like Real Madrid.
Thank you very much, Jens. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back with you for the next edition of the show on Tuesday, where we'll be discussing Real Madrid against Inter in some detail.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After six matches, it's a familiar feel, isn't it, at the top of the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich take on Borussia Dortmund, and it's the Klassiker of the season this weekend. Well, to look ahead to that game, Casey Keller and Steve Trundlow with us. Steve, let's start with you. Borussia Dortmund fans have been in this position before, going into a game that maybe they felt that they could get something from the defending champions. Has anything really changed? Can you give them some hope to suggest that maybe this time is their time?
I do think so. I think things are different this year for Borussia Dortmund. I think they have a chance. And I think we've seen a good example of that this year, Bayern Munich against Hoffenheim. Bayern Munich's defense is beatable, and they have weaknesses, and especially on the counterattack. And I think, and I know Lucien Favre and his coaching team have done their homework, and they've looked into this, and the way to beat Bayern Munich is just a lot of hard work defending, disrupting their build-up play, stressing those defenders, not letting them get into a rhythm. And then on the other side, after you've won the ball, getting good positions, your forwards floating underneath the back four and counterattacking this Bayern defense. That's the way to beat them.
How do you do it mentally going into it from a Dortmund? Because we know, Casey, they're young. That's a fact, and that's a fact that has been exploited before in the past. How do you get over that obstacle coming up against the big bullies, if you like, of Bayern?
There's no question that Bayern has the advantage on experience. Not only just from probably the player standpoint, but from just all the success they've had and you know, Champions League wins and on that side of it. Now, yes, energy is going to be important, as Steve mentioned, and if Dortmund are going to get a result out of this, it's going to come from a tremendous amount of hard work. My question mark is on Dortmund's athleticism in the back. Is can they contain Bayern's attack? I agree with Steve that I think Bayern's defense can be exploited, but I also think that Dortmund's defense can be exploited. So it's going to take a Herculean effort for Dortmund to win this match, but I do believe it's possible, but I think Bayern are still the favorite.
Meanwhile, surprising news coming out from Bayern. It's surprising, Steve, I suppose, how public this has now become. Withdrawing that contract offer for David Alaba. He will be free to go, to leave the club at the end of the season. Are you surprised, considering he is, I think, arguably one of the best defenders in Europe? It's come to this.
I'm very surprised, and I think even more surprised is David Alaba. I think that in his previous contract extensions, the club and himself have never waited this long to get a contract re-signed. So it was very surprising to all parties. And you know, I think Bayern at the end of the day really have to take their offer off the table to save face in the situation. And unfortunately now, there are no winners in the situation. Only time will tell if David Alaba will be a winner in the end, because I'm sure there will be some clubs lining up for him. But we are in a new situation. The world of football is still also feeling the effects of COVID-19. But I'm almost positive for these top players, for those top-notch players, that there will be offers on the table for Alaba. And I think in the end, he'll be happy. But for me, a one-club man, I would have loved to see him stay a few more years at Bayern and retire at Bayern. He's been very special and important to them. And I know, hearing his voice in the last interviews, I think he would like to stay as well.
It's incredible, Casey, when you think of it, 28 years of age, end of contract at the end of the season. I think you can make an argument that he could walk into any team in Europe. He is holding all the cards, isn't he, going into contract negotiations with whoever it may be.
Well, yeah, that's the key. And from a guy that played for a lot of clubs, I understand the lure of maybe having a new environment and a new challenge most likely be a new league, because I can't imagine any other Bundesliga side be able to pay what Bayern would. So yes, he's going to have options. There's no question about that. And the question mark is Bayern has said, look, this is more or less our best and final offer. If you're not interested, and he's obviously shown that he's not interested, that they're going to rescind that offer and say, well, we have a structure at this club, and if you're not willing to work within that structure, then as much as we like you, as great as a player as you are, you're not bigger than the club. And now the question is Alaba going to have the opportunities to play at a club that can pay him what he wants to make, and is it the right place for him? And only time will tell.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how this all plays out. Just a reminder then, it is Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund this weekend. It is a game that is live on ESPN+, with coverage starting at 12 p.m. Eastern. Casey and Steve then still with us to cast their eye on what went on regarding the US internationals over the weekend. We'll start, unfortunately, with bad news. Christian Pulisic, of course, pulling out of the Chelsea starting 11 before kickoff in their game. Suggestions he could be out for 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. Casey, this is unfortunately becoming too regular for the youngster.
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame, because obviously we know what a great talent that Christian is, and he's shown that in the time that he's been able to stay fit for Chelsea. Obviously he did great for Dortmund. He got the big move. Yeah, and then some managerial changes, and he had to really impress Frank Lampard, and then when he had the opportunity, he's done fantastically well. The problem is it's just been two stop start because of the injury issues. He's building back into fitness. And then he kind of slipped in warm-ups, and you saw the frustration as he was walking off the field. And yeah, I'm sure nobody feels worse than Christian, that he just hasn't been able to continue the good work that he started at Chelsea. And we just all hope that he gets fit and then gets a great run in the side and continues to show just what a talent he is.
And the frustrating thing, obviously, see, it's such a competitive environment given the signings that Chelsea have made and the number of options that they had. You want to continue to be banging on the door. And I imagine as a young player, there isn't much more of a frustrating thing to happen to you to have these continuous little niggly injuries.
Not only that, frustrating to the player, but also frustrating to the coach. And I think for any coach, and from the coach's perspective, you need players who can contribute consistently to your offensive game. And Christian, there are no questions behind his abilities and his ability to contribute regularly, but there are question marks behind his health over long term. And so, like Casey said, that's the question for him now, is can he string together a season, not only because he's also U.S. national team's bench player, not only for his club, but for his country as well. Can he stay healthy and contribute on both ends? That would make a Frank Lampard happy, and I know that would make a Greg Berhalter happy as well.
More positive news then from a U.S. perspective. Josh Sargent's getting his first goal of the Bundesliga season. And Casey, what I liked about this is that he had time to think about it and didn't panic.
No, it was a very composed finish, and he timed his run perfectly well, which is always important, and you know, created some separation. And then you're right, you know, you see so many times when you hear about a young striker and, oh, he had to think about it too much, and therefore that put him off. No, Josh did really well with the finish. And for a player that had been in a goal-scoring drought, now granted he's in a side that he's not getting tons of chances, but still, when you have an opportunity like that to bury it, to get a point out of the match, and obviously Werder Bremen are looking much more comfortable this season in a upper mid-table, you know, than they were in that really, really difficult dogfight at the bottom of the table last year, where they stayed in the Bundesliga by the skin of their teeth. And the more consistent Josh can get, just the better his career, the better it will be for for Werder Bremen, and then the better it'll be for, again, for that U.S. national team that is so desperately looking, you know, for that that striker to take over from Jozy Altidore.
Can he become that number nine, Steve?
I believe he can. I think Josh has consistently gotten better, which is a great sign. And here in Germany, he has won the trust of not only his coach, but also his teammates and the general media. And I think in any situation where Josh is maybe in a drought, he will now get the benefit of the doubt. And Casey can attest to this. Getting the benefit of the doubt in Germany as an American, or in Europe for that matter, is not an easy task. And what I have seen in Josh over the past couple of years is a steady increase in his development. And I think that is something that he can continue on, not only here in Bremen, but also in the U.S. men's national team. And this will, in my opinion, he will be the guy to replace Jozy Altidore.
Casey, just on that goal, we heard commentators talking about him giving the goalkeeper the eyes. Is that really a thing?
Not really. Simply because I'm so concentrated on what the ball's doing, I can't really look at somebody's eyes. I mean, I'll look at his body movement. I think if he kind of opens his body up and then is able to put the ball in a different direction, that's more so, I think, than his eyes. I understand the, you know, the reference, but it's more of a whole body shape than I'm not focusing on the striker's eyes. I'm kind of have to keep my eye on the ball a little bit at that stage.
Finally, let's head to Italy. Weston McKennie, of course, involved in Juventus's 4-1 victory, setting up Alvaro Morata for the opening goal. Steve, this, when you look at the curve that you imagine he'd be on, he's way ahead of it, isn't he, since that move to Italy?
I agree with you 100%. He's ahead of the curve, and this is something that's not only surprising to me, pleasantly surprising. I think Weston's a fantastic guy in your team. You need guys out with mentality and that athleticism, and that's something that I think that obviously Juventus was looking for when they were scouting him and acquired him. And the question for me is, you know, he's learning so much at playing at this high level, not only in training but on the weekends. Can he build on that and apply that in his game? And just going on athleticism and heart and playing at that high level and being around those great players isn't going to save him long term. So his ability really to learn from these experiences and, like I said, to apply them in future performances, not only in club but for his country as well, I think it's a huge opportunity for Weston. And I know, knowing him and the people around him, they're very excited about him taking this opportunity and running away with it. So it's an exciting prospect to watch, and it's something we have to follow very closely.
And it's an opportunity which he's taken, Casey. Obviously a surprise start early on, played well. He's continued that after being out with COVID. And that's the key thing. I imagine when you're amongst all these big players with all the eyes on you, it's one thing being there day in, day out and training well, but going and putting it on the pitch on a match day makes such a huge difference.
Well, and you're right. You know, he jumped into the side pretty early that people didn't really expect him to be in the lineup. And then, you know, he's missed some games, and obviously he missed some games with COVID. But to come back in a game, and you would expect, you know, in the games like, you know, Spezia, the games, the smaller lineups, that those are going to be the really key opportunities – against the smaller clubs, for him to come in where maybe they're shifting some players around because of their extensive schedule in the Champions League. But those are particularly the games that you have to shine in. And for him to be able to come in, make a great run forward, very unselfishly, you know, square it off to Morata for the tap-in, I mean, it really was an excellent play. And then now it's just building off of that. Now that you're done with the COVID, to be regularly either starting or being a contributing factor off the bench, and it is. It's going to be a fun season to watch, as Steve said. And yes, we know he's a good athlete. We know he works hard, you know, but being around those players day in, day out in training, in the competitions of Champions League and Serie A, can his technical ability, you know, catch up? And we're going to see, and it's great to see that he's contributing so early.
Brilliant stuff, as always, boys. Thank you very much. Well, McKinney will be in action this weekend. Juventus playing Lazio. That's the early game on Sunday, which is live on ESPN2 at 6:15 a.m.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Both Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Cristiano Ronaldo stealing the show for their respective sides in Serie A this weekend. Ronaldo coming off the bench to score a brace in Juventus' 4-1 victory. Meanwhile, Zlatan with that overhead kick winner against Udinese. Steve, where should we start? Do you want to start with Zlatan? Not bad at 39, is it?
Listen, as you seem to keep reminding me, Dan, when I said he wouldn't score 10 goals or more this season, I couldn't have been further from the truth. I mean, at 39, you know, considering the injury he got at Manchester United when he was 36, for him to step on the field, what, 3-4 years later and be doing what he's doing is absolutely insane. It's not normal. It's a bit of a freak of nature. This guy must have some body, because it's just not normal. Listen, he scored a great overhead kick. It should have been a free kick if you ask me. But the fact is that a 39-year-old is leading a team at the top of Serie A, and a 39 shouldn't be able to do that physically. Maybe mentally, yes, but the fact that he's able to do it physically is absolutely astounding.
What sort of coverage is he getting, Gab, overall in Italy?
Well, obviously right now everybody's celebrating him. Obviously he plays up to it, right? He's been great with the quotes. He says that, no, I'm younger now than I was 10 years ago. And it's all about the body and finely tuned machine and all this stuff. But I think, you know, people find him a lot more endearing today. I think he's matured. I mean, on the pitch, he plays a different role in the side. It is not all me, me, me. I mean, that's just the image he gives off. But he works for the team. He defers to others in a ways that maybe he didn't do in the past. And I think, you know, people have taken to that. It happens a lot when, you know, people maybe were criticized during their careers. I'm thinking of Wayne Rooney or David Beckham. Once they get old, suddenly everybody likes them, because you realize we might only have them for a few more years. And, you know, you look at Ibra, and you know that the whole alpha male thing is, yeah, it's real, but also he has fun with it. And, you know, in the past, you weren't quite so sure about that.
From Ronaldo's perspective, and we discussed it yesterday with Ali, I know his body language, I know everybody's different, Stevie, but there is a thing where you kind of feel like Messi's got the world like the weight of the world on his shoulders at the moment. Ronaldo just wants to play football and is so excited to come on. You can see him wanting the ball. And it just seems to be something that's ingrained with him, this childlike love for the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it boils down to two things. One is his appetite to actually score goals. That is the only thing he thinks about and is interested in, and it's putting the ball in the back of the net. And when he gets a chance to play against, no disrespect to Spezia, but he gets the chance to come on and take penalty kicks and get a chance to score more goals, then why would you not have a smile on your face? So this sort of game is perfect for him. Inferior opposition. You know your team's going to get chances. And if your team's making chances and you've got Ronaldo in it, then guess what the outcome's going to be? He's going to be on the score sheet.
A lot more talk, by the way, from Gab over on the Gab and Jules podcast. You can check that out and download that. It is available. Oh, it's available now. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everybody who joined us. Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Jules and Stevie answering your tweets. Welcome to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Jules was 25 minutes late today, wasn't he, Stephen? We were here making polite conversation.
No.
Yeah, I never noticed.
Oh my God. I can't believe you.
Well, the truth hurts. But we did learn during the 25 minutes that Stevie does a mean Sean Connery impression. Stevie?
Shut up.
Come on.
Hold on. It's a long shot, but it just might work.
Yes! Very good. I like that.
That'll do.
Yeah.
I said that's held under pressure, by the way.
Well, that's it, Stevie. And is it chilly in your house?
I'll answer the questions.
You've got your jersey on. You're not going to put the heating on yet?
Tell Lucas all made the money. I can just go and turn the heating on. Hey.
No. Oh my God.
This is near Ralph Lauren, by the way. Let me tell you.
That's a shock.
Yeah, Walmart special.
Lovely. There you are. Keeps you warm though, doesn't it, Stevie?
Yeah, just turn the heating on.
Oh, yeah, like a big time in November when it's freezing outside.
It's very cold. Oh.
Stevie, do you believe that Jota should be starting over Firmino, or should Klopp play all four of his star attackers, similar to what he did against Sheffield?
Not yet, no. I don't think the front three have any of them deserve not to start. And so the answer is no. Yeah, he did. He did try it. I think he played him right-hand side of the middle three against Sheffield, didn't he? Didn't quite work out. He's definitely better going forward than as part of a front three. But I don't think the time is right yet to make a change.
What does Stevie think about the job Gerrard is doing with Rangers, and do you see him as Klopp's eventual successor?
Well, he's doing a good job. Listen, when he took over, Rangers were absolutely miles away from getting anyone near Celtic. He's quietly and steadily built up his squad. He's, you know, the quality in the squad, your average player is way higher than it was. So then now they're actually competing with Celtic to win the Scottish Premier League. I think they're still top of the league. So he's doing a fantastic job. Now, it's a bit of a leap to go from the Scottish Premier League to Liverpool. I'm not saying it's not possible. It just seems a little unlikely. I would assume that he would be better suited to come in and be an assistant or something like that to begin with, and then become the manager. Maybe that's a bit harsh on Gerrard, because I'm sure, having been the manager, that's all you want to be. You don't want to be an assistant.
Yeah,
it's great when you have to make decisions. So I think it would be a bit of a jump. Maybe if he goes to a middle of the table Premier League side and maybe has a couple of years there and then gets the Liverpool job. If, of course, Liverpool are still top of the tree.
It's quite a long answer. Another question for Stevie, because Jules was late. We're ignoring his questions. Stevie, if you get three tickets to see a Champions League final, which other two boys from the cast would you bring along? Well, not Jules, obviously, because he'd missed the first half.
And me! So three of us to watch, if three of us were to sit and watch a game.
Yes, yeah, to the,
who would it be with?
Champions League final. Think about that.
Robbo.
Robbo?
Aye. No, well, because I sat and watched the Champions League final with Robbo.
Yes, that was Liverpool, Spurs.
Tottenham. Yeah. Who would the last one be? It'd probably be you, Dan, because you're a bit of a punter. You would just really love it and have a smile on your face.
Oh, I mean, if you took Craig, nice.
He might not even bother watching the game while he's there.
Yeah.
And then ask you about it half time. What happened there?
Yeah.
No. But I wouldn't smile that much.
Yeah.
So I would take you and Robbo.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Not Jules. Stevie, ESPN FC.
I'm surprised you didn't say Gab Marcotti.
Oh God, you don't want to sit next to Gab during a game. Stevie, you know when this stadium was built, don't you? You know the history of the ground before this was a stadium.
What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about.
What stadium?
Gab. Gab has got a story about everything. Wherever you go, it would be like, oh, you know the history of this brick. It was put here in 1871 by John
D.
Bellingham.
Yeah, I know. I wonder. Yeah. Why?
Stevie was showing. Stevie, ESPN FC was showing a mic'd up version of Thierry Henry barking instruction to players from Montreal. It was entertaining, but is it effective? I always told to coach during the week, not during the game.
Ooh. It depends what you're barking. And it depends who you're barking at. You know, you'll have guys who will just, although you can't do it now because there's no fans in the stadium, it was always easy just to give the old rubber ear and give it one of them, you know, I can't hear. And also you have to figure out at the time whether the information is just some emotional wreck on the side shouting and screaming at you for no particular reason.
Yeah.
So there's a combination of reasons why you would listen to it. But there are a couple why you would.
Jules, it must be more apparent to you now when you're going to these stadiums and you can obviously hear everything, the managers that are quiet and the others who are always talking.
Yeah, and it's fascinating, to be fair, to just look at them and listen to them. And most of them talk a lot and shout a lot. Klopp, Arteta, Pep, and sometimes what we saw from Thierry, for example, is very similar. Sometimes they say very simple things, like you even hear at grassroots level, for example. And sometimes it's a bit more complicated. Sometimes they're not happy and they shout. And they shout more than you expect them to, almost. And they shout on a player. And I mean, Klopp, I always remember against Thiago Alcantara, for example, one of his first games. And it was like, wow. But then the next minute it was forgotten. And then Klopp praised him for a great pass that he did or something. And I think that's what happens. If you think that a manager should not talk during a game, and some don't do too much of that, but I still think that that's part of the job of a manager. I think you have to guide them in a game. There's something that the players can't see that you can see on the touchline, that your assistant in the stand, who are higher up than you, for example, can see and give back feedback to the manager, who then can feedback to his players. So I think it's very important to have that kind of communication. It's just that some do it more than others, some shout louder than others. It depends on the personalities as well, I guess.
The dynamic we had at Liverpool, Dan, was the opposite. It was Ronnie Moran who was the one screaming, close the ball down, get back, get up, get sideways, get round, do this, do that. And then the manager, now and again, would chirp in, whether it was Kenny or anybody else. And so that I don't know whether it's because I was brought up that way, but that I thought was a better way of doing it.
Right.
I can't imagine listening to Kenny or Paisley or Joe constantly screaming this and screaming that, because eventually, and again, it might be the era we were brought in, number one, no question, you would stop listening. And then eventually it would start affecting the relationship, because somebody shouting and screaming at you constantly, you just get sick fed up of it. Sick fed up. You talk to some of the Man City players when Stuart Pearce was there. They used to drive them insane because it was just constant. So not just during the game, but then when they came off, and it was just too much.
That really intrigues me, Stevie. Stuart Pearce played at the highest level. How come he can't relate to that?
Well, I guess he was passionate when he played, and I guess when he's on the sideline, he's kicking every ball, and he's heading everything, and he's doing this and doing that, and I'm guessing he can't help himself. He just probably cannot help himself.
Yeah.
And by the way, again, if you're a manager and you're standing for 90 minutes and you're constantly barking, I'm kind of the same as you, Dan. Yeah, there's something been missing during the week in training or before the game.
Right.
Because you shouldn't have to stand for 90 minutes and tell people where to go and where to be and what to do. I mean, that don't seem right to me.
Should Manchester United be trying to get Pochettino as soon as possible before any other clubs such as PSG and Real Madrid need him, Jules?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. Again, do you think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can take this team forwards to do better than they did last season when they finished third, for example, and went to the semi-final of the Europa League and the semi-final of the FA Cup, for example? Do you think he can do that? I'm not convinced, I have to be honest. Despite some good performances along the 18 months, almost 2 years now he's been in charge, I think Pochettino is a better manager. And again, that's no disrespect to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but I think Pochettino is a good manager. I think Pochettino could do a very good job at that club with some of the current squad, but would improve that squad, and I think can improve players individually as well more than maybe Solskjaer can. I think it's a very good debate. I don't think Solskjaer will be sacked anytime soon, but I think Pochettino still being free out there, and we saw him here in the UK on television tonight, and he was very good. He's clearly on television because he wants people to see him and say, hey, you know, I'm here. If you need a manager, I'm here. That's why he was on television tonight. Otherwise, he would have stayed home in London. But no, he was on television. And yeah, I think it's a very good question.
What about his hair, Jules? It looked great, didn't it?
It's just, he knows the lockdown is coming, second lockdown, no barbers. Whoa. He should have gone earlier. He didn't have time. And now I think it's too late.
Him. I liked it. Very full. Beautiful. Jules, how happy are you that your friend Nene is looking to extend his contract with PSG? How many more years of birthday parties do you expect to be invited to?
Well, I believe it when I see it. They obviously have talked, will talk again. He's 28, so he's obviously closer to the end than to the beginning. How many years do you give him more? He wants, I think, quite a lengthy new deal. So you add, he's out contract in June 2022. He wants, I think, another 4 years on top of that. That's a long time. He's obviously on huge money. I don't think he's ready to take a pay cut, and rightly so. But if at least he doesn't ask for more money, maybe that's doable somewhere. Let's not forget that Kylian Mbappe, I think, is more of a priority because of his age, because the fact that he's from Paris and all other reasons. So I think if they could extend just one of the two, it would be more Mbappe if they had to choose, probably the Neymar. But if they can't keep Mbappe and extend him, I think Neymar would still be great, and to keep him at the club, it's very complicated, and I just don't think there's a quick answer to it. But I mean, I'm here for more parties anyway, you know that.
Certainly not a quick question. Who is their current favourite player in...